Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Pei Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 15 lines from the top of Daf Pei Ches. We open with a quote from the Mishnah. Get shekosfo ivris, etc. And we want to focus on the continuation. Kos ksav soifer v'eid kosher. If we translate that literally, it's a get that's written by a scribe plus one witness. That makes it into a kosher get. Om Reb Yirmiyah though doesn't translate ksav sofer and leave it as that, but rather chasam sofer shoninu. That the scribe featured in the Mishnah is a reference to the scribe, the one who wrote the get, as actually signing the get. So what you have in effect are two witnesses. One is the scribe serving as one, and the other aid that the Mishnah referred to. In order for that to be acceptable, Omar Rav Chisda Ha'amoni Reb Yossi Hi. This Mishnah has to be in accordance, I should say, Rav Yirmiyah's explanation of the Mishnah, saying that the reference to the scribe is the scribe signing on as a witness, can be understood and accepted only if you assume that the Mishnah is in accordance with Rav Yossi, that holds mili lo mimsram lo shaliach, that if you receive instructions, you are to execute the instructions you received and are unable to transfer to someone else. As a result, if the sofer, if the scribe signed on, it's a sure sign that he was instructed directly by the husband. And there was no, say, change in the husband's will. I.e., you could not have a situation where where an agent was ordered to write a get, and he, in turn, would ask the scribe to write the get and sign it, being that the scribe did not hear those instructions directly from the husband himself. Hahik subas chasanim de'asyo lekamei de'rabi avo de'have yadi lei le'toifsa ulechsimis yoda de'chad sahada. There was a ksuba of chasanim. We'll refer to this as a marriage document that guarantees the marriage obligations due to a woman. And this marriage document came to Rabbi Avo, and they recognized the handwriting of the scribe, and they also recognized one of the signatures. They did not recognize and were thereby unable to verify the second witness that signed. Sofar lachshura, Rabbi Avo thought that that's sufficient. We can machshir it because we recognize the writing of the scribe as not being some forgery, but rather authentic, that scribe's authentic handwriting. And we also recognize one signature. Amar le Reb Yirmiyah, and Reb Yirmiyah, consistent with what he said above, chasam sofer shoninu. The Mishnah that spoke about the sofer and one witness as being kosher, that's only if you have the sofer having signed as a witness, so that in effect you have the required two witnesses that you would have recognized. So that if you recognize only one of the witnesses that signed it and the sofer's handwriting, that's not sufficient. Kosav chanichoso v'chanichoso kosher. This was the last line of the Mishnah on Pei Zayin Reb Beis. I'm afraid it's a little too late to correct mistakes, but in our recording of the Mishnah on Daf Pei Zayin Amud Beis, we overlooked reading the last line. So we're mentioning that now. The Mishnah taught that if you write, as Rashi there calls it, the Shem Levi, that would be the equivalent of a family name. And you didn't write, we'll say, the formal, standard form names of the husband and the wife. Yosef ben Shimon is divorcing Rochel bas Sara, but rather you used a chanicha. Chanicha, in some contexts, it's translated as a nickname, but it's a name through which you can identify the party, even though it's not their formal name. Rashi, as we said, used the expression Shem Levi, which we would often translate as a nickname, the name by which the entire family was often referred to. The Gemara continues, Tan Rabbanan, Chanichas Avois Begitin Ad Asora Doros. Rashi here says, Ad Asora Doros Havio Chanicha Shim Kosvo Beget Lo Mifsula Lehemehve Kishino Shmo Yishmo. If there was a family name reference, it's considered binding or acceptable for 10 generations. And it's not going to render the get invalid as a get would be if you have the change of names. In other words, if the party's name is distorted and not represented in its actual form, that would represent reason for invalidating the get. However, if you refer to the parties in the get using a family nickname, that is, we'll say, is useful, kosher, up till 10 generations. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Gimel Doros, 3 generations. Kosher, Mikan ve'elich posel, more than 3 generations, referring back to some old family name, that would be considered invalid. Keman Azla, Hod Yom Rabbi Chanina. Chanina made a statement, and we want to know, in accordance with whom of the previous Tanoim does his statement conform. What did he say? Kosav Chanichas Ovois Begitin Ad Sholosh Doros. The reference to a family nickname is valid up till 3 generations. Keman Kerebi Shimon ben Elazar. That ruling would be consistent with Reb Shimon ben Elazar, who said that the reference to an individual as being part of that family, and you cite its nickname that was used 3 generations ago, does not constitute a change in identity of the party written. Amar Rav Huna, my craw, what's the pasuk that could be used as a reference point for this? It says, Ki soilid bonim uvnei bonim v'noishantem. The term solid, literally the pasuk means when you bear children and grandchildren, and then it becomes, and then you are there in a long fashion. And Shantim also indicates something that's aged, that's old and forgotten. So in this pasuk, you see the word solid, bonim. Bonim is a reference to a second generation. B'nei bonim is the reference to a third generation. And beyond that, the pasuk says v'noshantem. And something that, as we said before, is old is often forgotten. So up till 3 generations, the name that is associated with the individual as being a name used 3 generations ago is considered a proper, valid identification. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lo Chorva Eretz Yisrael Ad She'ovdu Ba Shiva Bote Dinim Avodah Zarah. We should note the triangle marking. On the side we have a Mivneh. These are Sholosh Inyonim Hakshurim L'Churban U'Puranah. So we have three topics that are related to destruction and punishment. So Rabbi Shimon Levi points out that Eretz Yisrael suffered destruction, and we're referring here to the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel. This took place only after there were seven, literally, courts, but it's a reference to seven royal families. A royal family would be defined as a family, an individual that starts to rule as a king, and his son follows, and his grandson follows. You have several generations, and at a certain point, another family defeats the previous family, and a new dynasty starts. So the reference here in the Gemara is to seven, we'll say, dynasties that ruled in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, and they were all guilty of idolatry, and the Almighty is long-suffering, He's Erech HaPayim, and only after seven dynasties passed, then the Almighty brought on the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel, whereby the ten northern tribes were exiled permanently. And here the Gemara lists off the first name of the kings in each subsequent dynasty. The first was Ve'eluhem. We say these are those seven dynasties: Yerovam ben Nevat, and Ubasha ben Achia, V'Achov ben Omri, V'Yehu ben Nimshi, Ufekach ben Remaliyahu, Menachem ben Godi, V'Hoshea ben Ola. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Umlila Yoledis Hashiva Nofcha Nafsha Ba Shimsha Ba'od Yomam Bosha V'Chafera. Without translating the pasuk literally, though, you see the reference to the number seven, and the pasuk describes the eventual destruction, the setting of the sun prematurely, and the embarrassment of the light, which for our purposes means the destruction after seven dynasties of idolatrous rulers. Omar Rabbi Hami, my kra. What pasuk do you have in the Torah that hints to this? Ki soilid bonim uvnei vonim. And there's a note on the star on the side, a starred note, where it's explained as follows: bonim. The word bonim is understood in the plural, minimum plural is two. Uvnei bonim. Again, a minimum plural of that is train, two more. Venoshatem, vishchatem, vasisem. You have three additional words. Hare kan shiva, a reference to the seven dynasties. And if you look at the posuk of Ki Soilid Bonim in Sefer Dvorim Perek Dalet, you'll notice there it speaks about the destruction. Amale Rav Kahana Rav Asi L'Rav. Rav Kahana and Rav Asi say to Rav, Ksiv Bei Boshe Ben Ela Vayas Hora Be'enei Hashem Rak Lo Kemalchi Yisrael. Describes him as doing evil, but not as bad as the previous dynasties. Uksiv Olav Olo Shalmanesar V'chule, and Dafka concerning him, specifically concerning Hoshe Ben Ela, the conquering empires ascended upon him and wrought the ultimate exile. You can see from the psukim we just cited that he was not as evil as his predecessors. Why then was the destruction ruled to set in specifically upon him? Omar Lohel. So Rav answered them, Oison Pardesios Shahoshiv Yerovam Al Hadrochim Kedeshlo Yalu Yisrael Regel. Yerovam, who was the first of the breakaway kingdom, where the northern kingdom of Israel split in the time of Rechavam, the son of Shlomo, from the southern kingdom of Yehuda, where there remained only two, basically two tribes and Shevet Yehuda, Binyamin, and Levi. In Yeravam's time, in order to prevent the people from his northern kingdom of 10 tribes from fulfilling Aliyos HaRegel, the thrice annual pilgrimage to Jerusalem, guards were set up preventing them from Aliyos HaRegel, from the pilgrimage to Jerusalem thrice annually. Bo Hoshea Bitlan, Hoshea ben Elah, he came. He was the seventh dynasty we referred to above. He came and abolished those guard posts. So you would figure once they're abolished, people would then resume the practice of the thrice annual pilgrimage to Jerusalem. V'afal became lo olu Yisrael l'regel, and even though there was nothing now preventing them, they still did not perform that mitzvah of Aliyos HaRegel. And he is held responsible for that, for their lack of fulfillment of Aliyos HaRegel. This is something to take note of, that throughout history there might have been periods of time that mitzvahs could not be performed, and against their will, and of course one is not held responsible for the lack of fulfilling mitzvahs that cannot be fulfilled. But then better times come, and those prohibitions and edicts that prohibited the fulfillment of mitzvahs are removed, and yet the people do not resume fulfilling them. That is considered a serious offense. Omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu, Oysan Shonim Shelo Olu Yisrael L'Regel Yehu Bashevi. Those years that the Jews did not fulfill Aliyos HaRegel, so let them go into captivity. Rashi, on the third line under the Gemara text, Oysan Shonim Shelo Olu Hayel V'lo V'she'en Moifa B'yodam V'lo Olu Yiglu V'yehu Bashevi. Since in those years there was no protesting, and they nevertheless did not go on Aliyos HaRegel, let them instead go into exile. Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Mar Ukva, the Amri Law, another version of names, Omar Rav Chisda, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Dorash Mreimar, Mai Dichtiv, Vayishkoit Hashem Al Ra, Vayivyel Olenu, Kitzadik Hashem Elokeinu. Now the Gemara asks, and through the Gemara's question we'll understand the translation of the pasuk. We ask in wonderment, Mishum de tzadik Hashem Elokeinu, because of God's righteousness, Vayishkoit Hashem al Ra Vayivel Elenu, Hashem hastened bringing the retribution, the punishment upon us. The pasuk described that Hashem brought punishment and retribution upon us as an act of loving kindness, of righteousness on the part of the Almighty. So how do we resolve these two seemingly opposite elements? On the one hand, hastening retribution, and the loving kindness of the Almighty. The bow tie marking that you see is explained on the side under the Mivneh heading, Shnei Hezberim L'Posuk Ki Tzadik Hashem Tu, explanations of what we just read in the pasuk. Elok stokos HaKadosh Baruch Hu im Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu demonstrated his righteousness and loving kindness to the Jewish people. Shehigla golus tzidkiyahu, he arranged or caused the exile in the time of King Tzidkiyahu, which was the actual Churban Beis Hamikdash, the actual destruction of Beis Hamikdash. When did that exile set in? V'adayin Golus Yechonio Kayemes. The previous partial exile, which took place 11 years earlier under the during the leadership, during the monarchy of Yechonio, who was a king that ruled before Tzidkiyahu. During his realm, there was a partial exile. And when the final exile took place during the time of Tzidkiyahu, 11 years later, members of the original exile, we call first stage of the exile, were still around. What is significant about that? Dichtiv Bei Begolus Yechoniah, regarding that first stage exile, it says, Hechorosh Vamaskir Elef. Before we translate or deal with the pasuk itself, we're not going to translate the pasuk literally, but the meaning of that pasuk is that there were 1,000 Torah scholars and Torah leaders that were part of that Yechoniah exile. 1,000 Torah scholars. Why are Torah scholars referred to by the term Chorosh and Masker? Chorosh Shebishol Shepoischin Nasu Hakol Chershin. Literally, when they start speaking, everyone else becomes silent. And the other word, Masker, Kevon Shesogrim Shuv Einon Poischin. When they close a discussion, if they reach a point where they cannot state a definite conclusion, no one else speaks up. Masker from word liskor, closing. Vekamo, and how many were there? Elef, 1,000. So now let's go over this point again. The mass exile in the time of Tzidkio took place when and the exile was, they were sent to the land of Babylon, Babylonia. There were all, God already had prepared the foundation for an exile, a Jewish community, in order to survive and even to flourish, requires a Torah basis. Without a Torah basis, a Jewish community will not survive, historically won't survive, it won't survive too long. How many years, though, that's not for us to say, but you can see throughout history that those communities that lacked a Torah basis, a Torah core to them, did not last, whereas communities that had a Torah basis tended to last many, many years. So the Almighty was concerned with the exile, which was, we'll say, inevitable because of their sins, but nevertheless, in order to preserve the Jewish community, he made sure that there was a Torah foundation before the mass, the balance of the majority of the Jewish community was then exiled. Ula Omar. Ula also refers to the tzedakah of the Kodesh Baruch Hu in the pasuk, mentioning the hastening of the Puranas. So Ula says, you want to know what God's kindness and righteousness was? Shehiktim shtei shonim levino shantem. In order to appreciate this, we recommend looking at Dvorim, Pasuk Chav Hei, and then Pasuk Chav Vav. It says in Pasuk Chav Hei, Ki soilid bonim uvnei vonim, v'no shantem oretz. When you have generations and generations of children, and you are a long time in the land, the hishchatim v'asisem pesel tmunas kol v'asisem urab b'enei Hashem elokecha v'achiso, and you practice idolatry and sinfulness in the eyes of the Almighty. Pasuk Chavav says, Ha'idoisi b'chem ha'yoyim es ha'shemayim ves ha'oretz ki avod toveidun maher me'al ha'oretz ha'shartem oivrim es ha'yardein shomu l'rishta. Lo sarichun yomim olel ki shomei ti shomei dun. That Pasuk Chavav says that, well, if you violate and fulfill that which is featured in Pasuk Chavay, a generational lifestyle of sinfulness, of idolatry, then I promise that you will certainly be destroyed and eradicated from upon the land. That's a very serious situation then, of total eradication. So what the Almighty did is he was makdim, he hastened the exile of the Jewish people before they reached the number of years represented numerically by the word vinoshantem. As the Pasuk said, if you reach a situation of vinoshantem, which numerically is 852 years on the land, living in sinfulness. So you will experience then total destruction. How many years did they actually sojourn on the land until they were exiled? 850 years. From the point of entrance to land in the time of Yeshua till the building of the first temple, 440 years. The first temple stood for 410 years. That's 850 altogether. And it's mentioned in the Meforshim that even upon the initial entrance to the land, there was already the presence of idolatry, the Pesel Micha. So for 850 years, the Almighty, will say, tolerated the presence of idolatry. And then 850 years later, exiled the Jewish people. That happened to be 2 years before, let's say, the ultimate end of time that would have been experienced had he not exiled them when he did. So he did so 2 years before reaching the 852-year mark. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Omer of Acho Bar Yankiv, Shma Mino, from this we discover, Mehera de Mori Amo, rapidness, when referring to the time frame of the Almighty, Tamni Mea V'chamshin V'tarti Hu, is 852. So the wheels of time that turn with regard to the Almighty is different than the way man experiences time. 852 is considered rapid. And you're asking, where does that figure? Well, it's in the Pesukim that we read. Because in Pasuk Chavav of Dvarim, Perek Dalet, it said, Ki avod tovedun maher me'al aretz. I will wreak total destruction quickly. And that quickly would have been had they remained in the land for 852 years. So 852 is associated with maher, quick, rapidness. We continue with a new Mishnah. On the side we have the Nosei, the topic heading, Get Meruseh, a divorce that's achieved through applying pressure, force upon the husband, Be Israel, where the pressure appliers are Jewish, Ba'akum, if they're Gentile. The Mishnah, Get Me'usa B'Yisrael, Kosher, Uba'ovde, Kechav, and Posel. It should be pointed out, by way of general knowledge, that a get is not acceptable unless the husband gives the get willingly. How a forced get, or get given under pressure, can be considered kosher, that requires further explanation. The Mishnah tells us that a get that's given by force, if the force is applied by Jews, that is acceptable. If the force that's applied to the husband is through Gentiles, that's invalid, possible. Uba'ovde kichovim, choifden oisoi, ve'oimrim lo, asei mash Yisrael oimrim loch. The Mishnah here is describing Gentiles that are applying the force, but at the behest of a Jewish court. And while applying the pressure, they're saying, they're demanding of him, do what the Jews, what the court is asking of you, to give the divorce. The Gemara here is not going to get into the reasons for a get being forced upon a person, but suffice it to say that there are reasons in halacha that a man must divorce his wife. And as we said, he has to do so, ultimately the get has to be done with the husband's approval. So we have this concept of of Makino Isai, we might even beat him, Ad Shiyomer Roitzani, until he comes forth and says, I want to give the get. His expression of saying, I want to give the get, is sufficient for us as far as achieving his willingness. In the Meforshim, you can see additional explanations to this. Amongst them is the idea that a Jew, if he's obligated to do something by law, even if he is obstinate or recalcitrant, his real inner soul wants to fulfill the halacha, the law. So the external obstinacy on his part is not a reflection of his true will. Therefore, with the force applied and his ultimate acquiescence, we say that that's a get given willingly. We now turn to the Gemara. You'll see that we've used a double underline to highlight the expressions Yisrael and Oivdei Kechavim. Omar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, get hamiruse b'Yisrael. A get that's forced by Jews, kedin kosher. If done lefi, if done according to the law, it's kosher. Rashi doesn't elaborate, doesn't list off, but he mentions as a general rule those kind of marriages that you see throughout the Shas that is described as Yotzi Vitein Ksuba, that he must divorce her and pay her the Ksuba, or there are marriages where it is really forbidden for them to be married, yet the marriage takes hold, but it cannot be allowed to continue. So we have this this instrument or this element called get me'usa, the forced get. So if it's done al pi din, where the couple really should be separated, kosher, the fact that force was applied, doesn't invalidate the divorce. And when she's divorced, she can then marry anyone she wants. Shelo kedin, posel uposel. If the force is done in a non-acceptable fashion, posel means it's not a valid divorce to enable her to marry others. However, posel, there is enough element of divorce to label her as a grusha, as a divorcee, whereby she eventually will not be allowed to marry a kohen. So in a situation like this, if the husband dies before giving the get on his own, she, though is a widow, will not be able to marry a kohen, whereas a regular widow could marry a kohen hedyo. The Gemara goes on, if it's forced through or forced by Gentiles, by idol worshippers, kedin posel uposel. Even if it's a type of marriage that should be disbanded, but idol worshippers are not the ones to force that divorce. So even though it's kedin, it's not a valid divorce and posel, but she cannot marry a kohen. Shelo kedin, afilu reach haget ein bo. If Gentiles force a man to divorce his wife improperly, then she doesn't gain the label of divorcee at all. And if that husband dies, she would be allowed to marry a kohen. The Gemara asks, Monafshach, either way you look at things, e oivdei kechavim b'nei asuyei ninhu, if idol worshippers are legitimate forcers of divorce, iskishuri nami liskasher, let the divorce be considered valid. Why did we say 2 lines ago that if oivdei kechavim forced the get kedin, it's posel, it's not a valid divorce? Ilav b'nei asuyeninu, if they're not acceptable, they're not valid to force a get, then mifsal lo lifsal. There should be no disqualification from the kahuna. Amar Rav Misharshia. You'll notice that we have a number one in a diamond, and on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh heading, we indicate the diamond highlights two shlavim, two stages, lahasbir atam, shall get hamu'usa biyad akum. To explain our attitude toward a get forced by idol worshippers. So Rav Misharshia, who says, we'll say, presents the first stage, the Gemara is going to ultimately reject what he says, but he says as follows: Devar Torah, get me'usa b'avdik echavim kosher. Get that's forced by Gentiles is legitimate. Umatam omru pasul. Why do we, the rabbis, rule it as being invalid? As a, we'll say it as a defense mechanism. Shelo tehe kol achas v'achas hoileches v'toyla atzma b'yoved kechavim. We don't want Jewish women who are dissatisfied with their marriages going out and hiring goyim, hiring Gentiles to force their husbands to divorce them. Umafkas atzmo miyad baila. If we would say that a Gentile forced divorce is acceptable, we're creating fertile ground for disenchanted women to have, through hired hands, their husbands forcibly give them a divorce. Ihachi, if we are to accept this explanation, the Gemara above said, Shelo kedin afilu reacha get ein bo. That if the forced get by the idol worshippers is done improperly, for no, without any legal basis, then there isn't even reacha get. There isn't even the aroma or the scent of a get. In other words, there's nothing. There's no divorce whatsoever. Well, if you're saying that on a Torah level, a get that's forced by Gentiles is a kosher get, why not say v'neheve ke shelo kedin be Israel? Why should we not parallel the shelo kedin of oivde kechavim to the case of shelo kedin by Israel? And the result of that is mifsal nami lifsal. Let the case of shelo kedin through ovde kechavim, where a Gentile forces the get but improperly, be treated the same way as shelo kedin by Israel. And what did we say in shelo kedin Israel? That there is an element of reacha get, where she does become disqualified from the kahuna. And yet we don't say that. Elohodirav misharshia badusahi. We have to conclude that Rav Misharshia's analysis is erroneous, is a joke. Rather, Gentiles are not acceptable under any circumstances in forcing a divorce. The Gemara then asks, "V'taim omai, why then do we say that a Gentile who forces in a forces a get kedin, meaning in a under say acceptable, there's an acceptable basis for the divorce. It's only that a Gentile is the one who's initiating the forced giving. Why then do we say that she, the woman, becomes unfit to the kuna?" The Gemara answers, we issue such a ruling as a gzeira, as to not confuse not to make a mistake concerning kedin by Yisrael. So the Gemara says, kedin, that means forced by Gentile under acceptable circumstances. We're not saying that it's acceptable for the Gentile to initiate the divorce, but it's a marriage that needs to be disbanded. That's kedin. So we're saying here, kedin, forced get kedin by Gentile, be kedin di Israel michlef. People would if we would could easily confuse that with the case of Kedin, with the case of Kedin the Israel. In the case of Jews that force a divorce under proper circumstances, that certainly results her in becoming a full-fledged divorcee and puzzle to the kuna. So if we want to ensure that people will not make a mistake about the case of Kedin b'Yisrael, so we say that Kedin by Oved Kechavim, even though on a Torah level it's nothing, nevertheless, so as not to come to any erroneous conclusion by Kedin b'Yisrael, we say Kedin by Oved Kechavim also passels. However, Shelo Kedin b'Kedin Yisrael lo michlif. People will not confuse a get that's forced by Gentiles in a shelo kedin, in an unacceptable situation, with the case of kedin be Israel. So that by our saying in shelo kedin by oved kechavim as being nothing, people aren't going to say that a kedin de Israel is also nothing. People won't make that mistake. Abaye Ashkeche l'Rav Yosef de Yosef v'koma'ase agiti. Abaye met Rav Yosef, finding Rav Yosef forcing a man to divorce his wife bedin because of legitimate reasons. Omarle, Abaye asks. You'll notice we have a long question. V'ho anan hedyotis anan. We, says Abaye about himself and Rav Yosef and the rabbinic community of their time, we are considered hedyotos. Literally, hedyotos means commoners, but it's a description of a rabbinic authority that did not receive smicha. Smicha is a, we'll call it, a form of rabbinic ordination that started in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and continued generation after generation up till a certain point. And we did not receive that form of ordination. And so we're called Hedyotas, Utnan. Hoy Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Komokum Shata Moitse Agurios Shel Oyde Kechavim. Wherever you find assemblies of Gentiles, Gentile communities, Afopi Shadinam Kedine Yisrael, even though their laws are the same as Jewish law, you are not allowed to be judged, to approach their legal system, to be judged by them. Of course, we're talking about a case of litigation between two Jews. They have no right to go to a Gentile court, even though the legal system there is the same as Jewish law. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'ela mishpatim asher tosim lifnehem." These are our laws that are placed in front of us. Lifnehem, v'lo lifnei oivdei kechavim, which means we are to approach Jewish courts run by Jewish scholars and Jewish sages, and not go to Gentile courts under any circumstances, even if they're legal system is the same as the Torah law. Dovar acher lifneim v'lo lifnei hedyotas. And here is what we want to emphasize in quoting this source, and that is that cases can be judged only by those that have the formal traditional ordination and not in front of hedyotas. And we are hedyotas. So how is it that you, Rav Yosef, are forcing a get? Amale, Rav Yosef answers, Anan shlichusayu ko avdinon. We in Bovel, who don't have ordination, are the agents of Bnei Eretz Yisrael, of the scholars of Israel that had ordination. So our judicial conduct is a function of agency on our part. On behalf of the judges in Israel. Midi dehave ahoidois valvo, similar to the way we prosecute and judge cases involving monetary matters. Hodos are cases where someone concedes that he owes money and then subsequently denies it, or halvos, cases of loans that need to be collected, well then, ihachi, if shlichusayu is that which legitimizes our adjudication of legal matters, then gezelos v'chavolos nami, should we not be entitled to judge cases here in Bavel involving gezelos v'chavolos, theft and battery? The Gemara answers, ki avdino shichusayu, when we apply the concept of agency for judicial behavior, the milsa d'shchicha, we apply that when it's when there are matters that are common, frequent, like loans, like divorces, the milsa d'lo shchicha lo avdino shichusayu. But concerning matters that are infrequent, that are unusual, so the power of agency does not operate, and hence we don't judge those cases in Bavel outside of Rav Shishiro, where we do not have smicha. The Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with the concept, with the phenomenon of something called a koil. Koil, a rumor, word that is spread concerning such and such and such and such. Let's see more about that. The Mishnah. Yotze shmo be'ir mikudeshes. Harezu mikudeshes. If word goes out that today so-and-so is going to marry so-and-so, and there are circumstantial signs that indicate thusly, she is considered married, and she would not be allowed to marry someone else without a get. Migureshes. If word goes out that that so and so, I should point out that we're going to give an explanation now that's based on the initial thinking. There's going to be a Gemara commentary on this, and therefore what we say now is not necessarily that which will remain at the end of the Gemara. But if word goes out that so and so is divorced, if you see in Rashi, Migureshes, Harezu Migureshes, Kosalka Dait, and the thinking right now is Dehochi Komar, what the Mishnah is saying is, Eishes Kayin Shiyotso Leo Koil, the wife of a Kohen, concerning whom word goes out, Ploinis Nisgar Shayom, so and so is divorced today. Harezu Migureshes Vasru Le Shevo Tachtov, she is considered divorced and cannot remain with her husband, the Kohen. A Kohen is prohibited in being married to a divorcee. The Mishnah continues. This recognition of koil, of word going out, has validity, ubavat shelo yehe shom amasla, provided that along with the koil, with the word, either regarding the marriage or the divorce, you don't have additional words, additional things that would undo, that would weaken the rumor. Ezo hi amasa. What would be an example of that? Giresh ish ploni es ishto. So and so is divorcing his wife, al tanai, but conditionally. So that it's not sure that the divorce is a real divorce, is going to be a real divorce. Maybe the condition won't be met. With regard to marriage, Zorak lo kidushah, man threw money. Kiddushin is the means through which a marriage would be established. Man offers woman money or something of value, and she agrees in return to be married. So he throws the money to her. Safek korov lo, safek korov lo. But there's a doubt. Did it land closer to her, or did it remain closer to him? And if it remained closer to him, so it didn't enter her domain, she never received it. Zuhi amasla. That would be an amasla the weakening, the undoing of the koil of Kiddushin. We now turn back to one of the examples in the Mishnah of Megureshes, and we explained it as saying that word went out that the wife of a Kohen was being divorced today by her Kohen husband. And we said that's a koil. So the Gemara asks, oh, that's a koil, that's a rumor that we have to reckon with. The Asrinon law agavra, are we then going to prohibit her to continue living with her Kohen husband that she's been living with up till now? The Omar Ravashi, kol kola de basur nisuin lo chayshina law. Rumors that go forth after a couple has already been married are not reckoned with. Rashi on this comments, Om Ravashi, kol kola shiotzal isha mishenises, any rumors that go forth concerning a woman after she's already married the husband, v'lo yotzal kol kodem nisuin, and no rumors were heard before the marriage. Rashi continues, lo chayshin lo, we don't reckon with it, kigonim nises l'koyin v'sol kol shoysa zoyna grusha. A woman is married to a Kohen, and then rumors go out that she is a Zona, she's a woman that had forbidden relations prior to their marriage, or that she is a woman that was divorced. Lo mafkina lo mine, we're not going to separate them. Elobiatus brura, unless you have absolute clear testimony, two kosher witnesses tell us this information. Vizu nesua v'medisi, and she has already been married. So only through clear testimony would we separate them, but not through mere rumors. So how are we to understand the Mishnah? Hochi Ko'amar. The Mishnah's citation of Megureshes is not, as we thought till now, a separate rumor, but rather it's in effect a continuation of the beginning of the Mishnah. Yotza Shmo Beir Mikudeshes. A rumor concerning a single girl went forth that she is getting married today. We say, well, she's then going to be viewed as being married to that man that was the subject of the rumor. And she wouldn't be allowed to marry someone else. She's allowed only to that man. Mekudeshes umegureshes. And then, following that rumor, there was a rumor that the fellow that married her divorced her. That very man that married her, that was the subject of the initial rumor, divorced her. We continue at the top of the Pei Tes. Harezu Megureshes. So that woman will be considered Megureshes. And that means she'd be allowed to marry anyone else she wants. My Taima, why do we rule thusly? Answer, Koil Vishovro Imo. You had the initial rumor and its undoing together. So what we are showing, we're demonstrating here, we're not dealing with a rumor concerning a woman that had an initial well-established marriage. We're dealing with a rumor concerning divorce of a woman whose marriage itself was only based on a rumor. Rashi on the top line, my taimo hare koil shechoshashnu lo tchilop, the rumor that we had suspected initially that she was marrying so and so today, shovro imo, its undoing comes along with it. So that it's essentially one situation, namely a woman concerning whom there's a rumor that she is married to so and so, but that she's also divorced from so-and-so. Let's look at Rashi together at the bottom of Pei Chesomet Beis, Hochi Komar, Hai Koil de Megureshes, Areshokoi. The Mishnah's reference to a rumor that she's divorced is related to the beginning of the Mishnah. The Isha Pnuya Shiotzla Kol Mikudeshes, a single woman concerning whom a rumor started that she is getting married today. Chayshinon La V'yasulin Osei Elozo Ish Chozer V'yotzla Kol Mikudeshes. And concerning that woman, a rumor came forth that she was divorced. She gives Shosaplan that very man whom the initial rumor said married her, divorced her. She also lo kill, that's the Oisiponi she also lo kill Kiddushin Mimenu. The rumor of the divorce concerned the very man who was the subject of the rumor of that initial marriage. But let's make it clear. The main point is that we're not dealing with a rumor of divorce concerning a woman that had a formal, well-known testimony-based initial marriage. Omar Rava, Yotzo lo shem mezane be'ir. Ein choshishin lo. A single woman was the subject of a rumor that she had intimacy with an idol worshiper, with a slave. We are emphasizing here rumor. A woman, a single woman that has actual intimacy with an idol worshiper, with a Gentile, she is forbidden to then marry a Kohen. So that if you have a single Jewish girl that was having intimate relations with Gentiles, that woman, that girl, cannot marry a Kohen. But here we're not talking about actual knowledge of it, but rather a rumor. Well, if it's a rumor, we're not going to reckon with it. We're not going to prohibit her from marrying a Kohen. My time off. Why are we so lenient? Pritzusa bi'amahu dechazulah. The rumor is probably because people saw some type of unacceptable, lewd behavior. I think the term that is used nowadays is sexual harassment. But it doesn't mean an actual act of intimacy involving male penetration. So lewdness was seen, kittens. And that itself is not grounds for prohibiting the woman from eventually marrying a Kohen. Ketanoi. And this matter, you will see, is the subject of a Tanaic controversy. Ochla Bashuk, Girgara Bashuk, Niko Bashuk. These are behaviors that are we say, not acts, they're immodest behaviors. A woman eating in public, you know, walking down a major thoroughfare, a major boulevard, eating a sandwich. That's ochlo bashuk, or girgur bashuk. It's a form of suggestive posture while walking. The term that Rashi uses, netuyas goron. Gemara and Shabbos elaborates on this in very harsh terms. But it's a type of personal carriage that is unbecoming. Niniko Bashuk, some might find this politically incorrect, but the Chazal nevertheless say it, and that is nursing in public. That's considered an act of immodesty. Bekulon, Rebbe Meir Omer Teitse. In all cases, in any of these cases, Rebbe Meir would say that she must leave. What does that mean, she must leave? So in the context of our discussion, let us assume, because you don't have Rashi does not appear to comment directly on this, but from the Tosfos you can see that Rebbe Meir is referring to a woman that while she was single, this reputation went out concerning her, and then she eventually married a Kohen. So you have a case of a Kohl before Nisuin. So her marriage to the Kohen was improper. And therefore, Rabbi Meir says she must leave her Kohen husband. We're assuming behavior like this is indicative of a of a woman that would have most likely had intimacy with idol worshippers, with Gentiles. That's Rebbe Meir's opinion. Rebbe Akiva Omer, Rebbe Akiva says it's not enough that there's mere rumors, but Mishi Yisuv Yitnu Ba Moizoros Bilavona. Rashi says Moizoros Bilavona, Noshim Hatovus Beshuklor Halvona. Women that spin wool outdoors under the light of the moon. Vedakon Lasul Sichus Betelus. Women like that chatter with one another, all kinds of talk. Uladaber Bechashuda Shabirin. What comes up in their conversations are all kinds of, we'll say, local suspicions concerning immodesty on the part of women folk in town. So Rabbi Kiva says that in order for a rumor to be considered of substance in the context of our discussion, it would have to be that it reached the public chattering of these women. Omar lo Rabbi Yochanan Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan responds to this and says, Im Kain, if you're going to be so strict in your ruling and place importance upon these kind of rumors, lo hinachta basla Avrom Avinu sheyeshevez tachas bailo, you're not enabling a woman to continue being married to her husband. Rashi says, lo hinachta, a very important point that Rashi brings out here. He says, sheyesh oivim moitzim kol b'chinam b'remez muad. People have enemies. And it's not unlikely that someone will start a rumor just to make life hard for those that they do not like. So, if you're going to place a premium on this situation of people murmuring, telling stories of immodesty concerning various women, those women, and then you're going to say, well, they've got to leave their husbands, you're not enabling a situation for a woman to be continued married to her husband. The Torah itself doesn't have that level of expectation. All the Torah says, ki motza ba ervas dovar. You have two psukim in which the word dovar appears. The first pasuk describes a married woman concerning whom there is found an act of ervas dovar, prohibited intimacy. The second pasuk describes how do you establish facts. Facts are established only through formal testimony of two or three witnesses. Mala halon dovaboru, just like over there with regard to formal testimony, you have something of judicial clarity. Afkan dovaboru sutu, when you deal with matters of ervas dovar, of forbidden intimacy, it has to be information that's clear through formal testimony. Witnesses that can say they saw an act of intimacy that's prohibited. But anything short of that, mere rumors are not going to be grounds for separating a couple from one another. So that you can see that the issue of how much importance is attached to rumors, even rumors that are before Nisuin, is a machlokes tanoim. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.